used to joke about the world being upside down, but guess what? No one's laughing anymore. Where do we go from here? Let's talk about it on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
Hey, we're so glad you're here. You always have a place on our website. Our table, but we're still not back in the studio because of social distancing. Some are in their offices.
I've got a little room on the corner of my desk. Homes.
And what?
I've got a little room on the corner of my desk. We can put somebody there.
So you're welcome to join. We are glad that you're here. I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy. Matthew Border is here. Matthew says that during the quarantine, he gained a lot of wisdom. And by wisdom, he means weight. Have you really?
I don't know. If I don't step on the scale, then I don't know. So
that's right. Good move. That's thoughtful and wise.
Yes.
And our producer, Jinx, is working hard in this little glass booth or wherever he is. Jinx knows all about sound. And on Father's Day, he hopes to be sound asleep. That may be the only day you do get
it. I'm going to take an Ambien for breakfast.
And then our video director, John Myers, is in his tech bunker. John has kids. He loves it when they call him Big Papa. Matthew, is that another rap joke?
A rap joke? Is it? Who knows? Who can say if that's a rap joke?
Got to get the licensing so we can put the underlying music in there.
And Dr. George Bingham is the president of Key Life. And if you'd like to support Key Life financially, the doctor will see you now.
Nice.
And Kathy Wyatt.
No waiting.
No waiting. And you don't have to wear a mask either. And Kathy Wyatt is the soft feminine side of the program. Kathy suffers from eye strain brought on by rolling her eyes at Matthew's jokes. We're all kind of
occupational hazard.
You know, I guess most of us are still going to church online. Some churches have opened, but I'm not there yet. It's not because I'm afraid of the virus. I'm afraid of the preacher. And how bad his sermon will be when every other row is empty. They say I'm not affected because I'm doing this for Jesus. It's a part of my worship, they say, so it doesn't affect me when nobody comes. Oh, yeah? Well, it does, and I'd rather watch a sermon online when they don't know whether anybody's watching or in attendance. Then go to church where every other pew is empty. But I suspect that
Are you afraid that he would just stare at you the whole time?
Do what?
Are you afraid that he would just be staring only at you and singling you out?
That's the main reason, Jinx. You know, when the congregation is so small that when the preacher says, beloved, I blush. I want to be somewhere else.
Fresh.
But as I was saying before I so rudely interrupted myself, I went to church online. And you know where I went on Sunday? I went to Summit Church and spent some time. A great hour, by the way. It was a great hour. Zach, who can't be with us today, and I wish he could be because he's very sensitive on the subject we're going to be discussing. He had an African-American preacher preach on Sunday, but at the beginning of the service, before they started the worship, which, by the way, was outstanding, and if you're looking for a church online or even to attend, you might write, and you live in Central Florida, you might want to check out Summit Church. At any rate, Zach, at the beginning of that online service, was sitting in his study, and he was talking to the people of his church. He told them he loved them. He told them he was praying for them. But he told them that we need to keep on keeping on. He said, what happens when you have a crisis in a culture is that everybody jumps on the bandwagon. We all yell, wring our hands, put on a hair shirt and use a cat of nine tails and talk about how horrible it is. And then after it passes, we forget about it. And he said, this is one time when at least Christians can't forget about it. We can't let it drop. We've got to keep talking about it. And I agree with that. And I was thinking about this program this morning. I even prayed about it, which is pretty religious. But I've been thinking about this program, and I was wondering, what are we going to say? This is a, quote, Christian, unquote, program. We try to make it safe for little ears, except when we're talking about sex, and we always warn you before we do that. But it is a program with a Christian worldview. At the heart of it is grace. And we could say what everybody else is saying. We could be angry. All of us have been angry on occasion during this time of protesting and riots. We could repent. I suspect that all of us have done some repenting, listening to what others are saying. We could, and then get the hair shirt and do our thing and kneel at the right place in front of the right people. I suppose we could come from the left and make an obscene gesture at the right, or we could come from the right and make an obscene gesture to the left. But this ought to be different, and it really ought to be different. And as I thought about it, I thought about Jesus. That's not a bad thing to think about. It's interesting how he dealt with his culture. He was clear. He spoke truth. He never backed off. He didn't shilly-shally, of course. That cost him a cross. But one of the things that we sometimes miss about Jesus, and it's in the 19th chapter of Luke, it's only one of two times that we ever see Jesus doing this. When Lazarus died, he wept, and he wept on one other occasion, and that is as he looked over the city of Jerusalem. And what he said on that occasion was really interesting. He said, how often I would have gathered you as a mother hen would gather her chicks, and then in one of the most, a statement filled with as much pathos as you can muster, Jesus said, and you would not. On another occasion, Jesus said, and this is in Matthew, he said this, that he looked out on the crowds, and they were like sheep without a shepherd. They were lost, and he had compassion on them. So it seems to me that if we're going to talk about this particular subject, we got to have the spirit of Jesus in us. Don't forget about the tears. When we interviewed our friend Bishop Herb Andrews, he talked about watching Floyd's killing in Minneapolis. And I was interested at hearing the anger that came from the bishop. And you know what he said? He said, my heart was broken. I was so sad. So it seems to me, if we have the spirit of Jesus and we look at out over what's happening here, there ought to be some tears from Christians. There ought to be a broken heart. There ought to be some sadness. And that comes because we know, and most people don't. What do we know that they don't? They're smarter than we are. They're better looking than I am. What do we know that they don't? We know him. And he's the one who could be the shepherd. He's the one who protects, who speaks truth, who makes sure that every need is met. That's what we know. And we found him. And there's a sense in which as Christians, and you've heard me say this 1,000 times, I think I got it from D.T. Niles. And it's this, that we're beggars telling other beggars how to find bread. And so it seems to me that as Christians, one of the things we should do is that we should talk. We should talk to a lot of people, even those with whom we disagree, but that's becoming increasingly difficult. And that's the saddest thing about this whole thing. I was talking to a pastor's wife yesterday, and we were talking about this present situation. Her name's Karen, and Karen said this. She said, you can't say anything anymore because everything you say is wrong, and then you are labeled in ways that don't reflect the truth of who you are. That was a profound statement, and that's one of the areas of great sadness for us. You know, I obviously, and I can't believe that we're out of time for this segment, but I'm going to continue with this rant a little bit on the other side of the break and watch the clock more closely. For now, like Jesus, we're leaving, but we're coming back.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have 4 mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These 4 mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
You're listening to Steve Brown, Etc. And we don't have a guest today because we thought it was time to sit down and talk. One of the problems with the crisis we're in, and that's why Christians can't afford to be silent. As long as there are tears in our eyes, as long as our heart is broken, as long as we have the view of Christ as we talk, I think there are people that might listen. I obviously can't imagine African-American situation, the dealing with the police, the constant fear. But I also, and this doesn't make me a racist, I can't imagine African-American families living in real bad areas who are requesting more police, not less police. And they're never heard because they can't say it. I can't identify with an African-American police officer. I had read an incident where one of their those officers said, "This is plain hell for me. You have no idea." I can't imagine being Jewish and living under Hitler, or living in West Virginia in a trailer park and being abused by the rich who don't give a rip for me. I can't imagine. You get the idea. We had over 1,000 police officers die in the line of duty in the last 10 years. And I looked it up. You know, that that's kind of scary too. We gotta talk about the elites who are getting rich on the backs of the poor, and often the poor are African Americans. We need to talk about that. We need to talk about injustice, but we need also to talk about black on black crime. We need to talk about the absolute devastation of the black family. We need to talk about why Planned Parenthood puts abortion clinics in the black American neighborhood. We need to talk about these things, but only with tears. Well, I've said my piece. You guys are a good congregation. Now George will take up an offering and then you join in.
I think you hit on something really important when you talk about the tears. There's an intellectual level of these conversations, and then there's another level of the emotions. And
yeah,
and I feel like to get to the intellectual stuff, we've got to connect first on that emotional level to say, you know what, maybe we'll find some common ground. But right now, let me just identify with you and mourn with those who mourn. And to be completely honest, I struggle with that, with the onslaught of news. I hear about some terrible natural disaster. This is a confession here. I hear about some natural disaster and you're like, oh, it's some island somewhere. It wasn't Americans. Well, okay. It's a horrible thing. It's a horrible thing to say, but we're just so focused on our own stuff. We kind of are insulated and calloused, maybe as a survival instinct. I don't know, but I think it's got to get to the heart.
Do you think sometimes that's a supernatural thing that has to happen to you? You know, you can't fail. Well, if you're sitting with a bunch of people and you see a natural disaster, you'll express great sadness because of what they think, not what you're feeling inside. Or at least that's true of me. If nobody's around, I don't give a rip, and I try not to even show that I don't give a rip or to show that. I don't care. But you're right. There's a sense in which we can't get to the intellectual level until we identify on an emotional level. Did y'all feel that? When Bishop Andrew was here and he was telling us the story.
Well, and I think so many of, in talking with someone younger that's very sensitive to their African American friends, and that. It seems like everyone can tell a story of feeling like they have been unfairly targeted. And their conclusion is only because, you know, they wouldn't have some other reason other than the color of their skin. So it becomes, it's sort of at minimum a point of identification, apparently, among the community, African-American community, that whatever you would say the actual reality or the statistics or whatever are, that is, it is something at a feeling level.
It is.
That is very pervasive. And, I don't know how, I mean, I would be projecting to say that they would care whether or not I could feel that with them. I guess so, but they certainly want people to recognize, and maybe, non-people of color, white people in particular, to recognize that they have that common experience.
You know, we did a pastor's chat with Jerry Perry's. He's my beloved friend, African-American pastor, and I love to go there and hear him preach. And sometimes he even lets me come and puts a honky in the pulpit of his church.
token.
But we decided to just sit around and talk about these issues. And Jerry began to tell me stories of things that he had personally experienced. And because I love Jerry so much, I found myself tearing up. And there was some of that when the bishop was being interviewed by us, too. And I kind of think, and I said some things to Jerry that were not politically correct. And he heard me because he saw the tears. And I think that's a good point, Matthew, that you brought. I mean, good commentary, George, on that. Jinx, get a haircut and say something.
Man, you know, it's,
start eating.
Well, I'll take a little time after the break, because, you know, I come from a section of the country where almost the opposite happens in a completely different way to us. So I'll talk
make
more
that
about
a teaser, and we'll talk about it on the other
you
side.
You know, what I would seriously be interested too, Jinx. Have you ever felt because of having long hair still at this stage of the country that people have prejudged you?
Steve just
gets it all the
Steve
time.
Makes
for
me feel so bad all the time.
Yeah, you poor dear.
It happens some, yeah, but not near as much as it used to. There's a little bit bigger issues than hair out there, I guess. I probably should brush it, though. And is that a gray one?
And when we come back, Kathy's going to talk about her experience in the protest. Got a lot to say. Don't go away.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know. A gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
To Steve Brown, etc., and we're so glad you're here. Thanks for being with us. If you haven't done so already, make sure you get our free weekly email. It's called Key Life Connection. Just go to keylife.org and subscribe. And by the way, you can join thousands if you're listening on the radio who watch the video version of this particular program. You get to see how incredibly handsome and beautiful we are, and you're missing that if you're listening on one of the 100 or 200 radio stations that air this. So go to keylife.org and you find out how to subscribe, and you can join the thousands who have done that, who have subscribed to the video version of this podcast. Jinx, you were saying before, and the reason I kid Jinx about his hair is for those of you who are watching on the video version, you understand. It's called jealousy, and I just can't help it. But Jinx, you were saying before the break that you grew up in a place where things were a little different. Talk to us about it.
Yeah, I mean, and it's drastically different living in Orlando, which I feel from the diverse amount of friends and acquaintances that I've made here in Orlando, that this is probably one of the more, I don't know what the proper term would be, diversely accepted towns, you know. And I personally, let me put this out front, I was raised in a way to know that while we had our set of beliefs and our strong convictions, you know, it was our Christian duty to teach others and to exemplify that outpouring of love and Christ-like nature, which honestly, I don't think I'm very close to that. But in all that, I mean, I was not raised to be the way that many people look upon the area that I came from. I was born and raised in South Mississippi, and books from authors from Mississippi, even a lot of movies and history too. Yes, definitely history. Stigmas, Mississippi, Alabama, and some of those areas as being racist communities. And I mean, I've met people all over the road on tour and stuff, and like, where are you from? And you know, you tell them, and they're like, you're one of them racist dudes, right? And it stings more than the hair. I mean, it really does. And you know, it's when people start to go on rants, you know, I have to stop and suppress my own internal anger and emotion, because I just want to lay into them and be like, look, you are absolutely right. I do not know what it is to be in someone else's shoes, much less their skin. But you're going off on me for being a horrible person when I'm not. You don't know. I mean, you don't know that that's who I am or how I feel. And I mean, I tell everybody I've got a rainbow of friends, all different beliefs, all different orientations, and all I can do is be me.
Good statement. That makes you, by the way, you're not a racist. One of the real problems with this whole discussion, Matthew and I were talking about that yesterday, is that if everything is racist, you know what I read this morning? That Rice Krispies is racist because Snap, Crackle, and Pop are white. That's crazy. It was serious, by the way. And if everything is racist, what you do is you trivialize the word, and nothing is racist.
Right.
And people who really are racist,
get away
who
with
hate
it.
People because they're of a different color, you let them off the hook. And that bothers me, too. So I wish somebody would stop and define more clearly what racism is. And what you describe, Gene, is not racism.
We were raised to do the right thing. And, you know, as a young kid, I had friends of all colors and didn't really pay attention to it. I mean, I noticed we'd had that grace encounter where I think it was McClendon said, you know, don't tell me you don't see color, because that's garbage. That's not true at all.
It's important.
But he said, don't let the color you see block seeing me. Yeah. And I get so frustrated with these rants. I mean, I've just kind of stayed off of Facebook for a while, because it's like, I'm like, look in the mirror, people. Quit going off on everyone blindly. Get to know people. Love them for who they are. And if you want to go after something, go after the things that are wrong. You know?
Yeah.
Yes, the killing of Mr. Floyd was wrong. It was 100% wrong. I mean, that's black, white, or purple. You don't do that. That's just wrong. And that's where my frustration comes in, is that it's like there's more to it than what the media is making money off of.
Good stuff. You know, I heard a black brother say the other day that a lot of what was happening was white guilt, some of which we ought to feel. But a lot of it is a manipulative tool to get power and money. And you have to watch that. And Christians need to speak truth to that issue, too. But again, with compassion, because we're not that wonderful ourselves. And self-righteousness is going to kill us all. We're all sinners, and we have a great Savior. All of us, black, white, and yellow, rich and poor. Kathy's going to tell us about her experience in burning a building down in a protest on the other side of the break.
It was
was irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, "You know, she seemed like a very nice lady." I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Anybody ask you what you're listening to, you tell them a bunch of white folks talking about black folks and trying to do it with a bit of wisdom. You ought to go to our website, keylife.org, and look at some of the sessions of the Grace Conference. That was a time of great grace and love, and it was an incredible time between black churches and white churches, and you ought to check it out. Kathy, I, of course, was kidding. You didn't burn. You had that torch, but you never used it when you were doing your. No, you were in a march last week. And why did you do it? And what was it about?
Well, it was a local, just a local town. You know, there are a lot of small little towns all around the greater Orlando area. And this was centered in the little town of Castleberry. And just several pastors got together, African-American, white, Hispanic. And we all met at Target and just marched, walked, whatever you want to call it, to the African-American church that was about a mile away. The police were there. It was really, really nice. The chief of police was there along with obviously a number of officers and spoke, and all of the various pastors spoke and prayed. And basically we're saying, you know, this kind of thing happens when something really bad happens, you know, in a specific community or in this case right now, like throughout the country. People are just really angry and they're really tired of it. And, you know, so everybody's latching on to wanting to do something in the hopes that they can be part of affecting a change. And it was very nice. And one of the things that they talked about was, you know, you can't just do this kind of thing once. You have to, this has to be a springboard onto something else. And it was interesting because last week when we talked with Bishop Herb Andrew, that was one of the things that he talked about was the fact that change doesn't come as a result of people reacting to a specific incident that happened. Change doesn't come until the heart changes. And that change only happens as a result of the gospel and people understanding about grace. But one of the things that's been somewhat significant for me over the last several years since we did the Grace Encounter conferences is that I've tried to attend on a fairly regular basis. You mentioned Jerry Perry's, who's our African-American pastor friend who is here in this area. And I've tried to attend his church because I have no context from which to understand anything, you know, within the African-American community. And so I go and I enjoy the worship and I listen to him teach and also his wife, because she's the co-pastor. And I've met a number of families, and one of the families that I've met have two little girls, 7 and 3, and I've just fallen in love with these people and had them in my home, the little girls, for tea parties and all of that. And so when I see all of this stuff that's happening and I hear Bishop Andrew and Jerry Perry's talk about the things that they've dealt with their entire lives, I think about Natalie and Aubrey. And I wonder what these children are going to be faced with as they continue to get older. simply because of the fact that they're African American. And because I know them, it is very gut-wrenching, but that only came as a result of getting to know these people somewhat. And I need to know them even better than what I do now. But, you know, I think unless you really are invested in people, whatever the situation is, unless you're really invested in them, I don't think we can ever, I mean, I can't become a Black woman, you know, like the, what you were saying at the beginning, Steve. I mean, there's just some things I can do, but there's some things I can't. But I certainly can find out more in order to be able to understand, which I don't think I do very well.
But I think one of the things we'll discover when we cross those lines, and we're doing it more, by the way.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's some good things happening. Nobody's going to, none of the national media is going to record the Castleberry March.
No, they're not.
People that loved each other, they're just not going to, because it doesn't build ratings and it doesn't sell papers and it doesn't create a narrative that will divide us. But I think one of the things you discover when you start hanging out is one of the things I've discovered about Jerry is that we are so alike. You know, his skin color is different than mine and mine from his. But when we deal with pastoral problems, family problems, worries about our sons and our children and our grandchildren, worry about paying the bills, being insecure, being afraid, wanting to preach a sermon that make, you know, we walk in the same shoes. And you find out, and I found out this years ago in a Black area in Boston. When we went there just to find out, I found out they're me. They really are. You know, the fathers are just like me as a father. And we don't allow that to happen either because, and I'll tell you something, Kathy, when those little girls grow up, Kathy has little girls over to her house to bake things and have tea parties and stuff. A part of their experience will be that, and it'll make a lot of difference.
Well, you know, when you watch, you know, you see stuff, you know, frequently on TV and Facebook where people show, you know, small children getting together and, you know, it appears at a very young age that they just have no concept of the differences between them. And I watched those little girls the last time we did this. Matthew's girls were there and a couple of others. And here are all six of these children in the pool and they're doing crafts and they're having lunch and they're having the best time. And nobody's looking at anybody like there's anything different about anybody. You know, Matthew's girls were having a great time. These other, I mean, all of them were just enjoying being together. And I, you know, it's like, if we just spend a little bit of time getting to know people, you know, I think, and I think that's a good thing that maybe is starting to happen right now. The question is, how long will it go on?
And that's what Zach was saying. And
exactly.
If you were here, he would
exactly.
say, this is not something you just do in a crisis. You
exactly.
do all the time.
Yep.
And guys, I hate to say it, and it's arrogant and self-righteous to say it, but nobody can do this except us. I mean, we're the only one who have the gasoline to do this kind of thing. And if we don't do it, nobody's going to do it. I mean, we are the people who ought to have the tears and are the only ones who can have the tears from that perspective. And so back to what we were saying at the beginning, Christians ought to have something more to offer than the talking heads on television. I'm old and I'm irritated about being old already. So when I turn on the television and watch the newscast, man, I've become a serial killer. And I'm at least Christian enough to know that that's not right. I'm not supposed to be that way. I should, and I'm convicted. I'm going to have a tea party at my house. And I'm going to
make the cookies.
Get some children, and I'm going to bake some cookies. And then everybody will know how spiritual I am.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
We're so glad you joined us for this hour. I hope you found it helpful. Maybe not. I did. I feel good when I sit down and talk to others and we share a common concern. I don't know if you've noticed, but our president, the chief honcho of Key Life, is Dr. George Bingham. And one of the things, and we've been friends for 1,000 years, and I trust this man and love him more than I can tell you, is he has an incredible, he doesn't say much, but when he says things, you got to listen. And he has a gift of wisdom. And generally, I do a short thing at the end of this broadcast, and I'm going to ask George to say some things that are going through your head right now.
Oh, well, with a setup like that, I can hardly wait to hear what I've got to say.
I'm going to bring it.
my biggest fear is that not that I'll disappoint everybody there, but disappoint myself. But the one thing we were talking about at the break, which I wonder if there is a potential source of agreement on both sides, is that it's unfortunate, but there are a lot of people that have the opportunity or taking the opportunity to profit by the division. They have a vested interest in furthering the division. And it seems like something that, you know, from both sides might be somewhat of a starting point if we call out both of those, call them out from both sides, that there might be an opportunity for a beginning point of talking. And I, you know, the whole issue that it's like, we say Black Lives Matter, and it's almost not safe to say anything else like All Lives Matter or something like that. But I wonder, you know, from a Christian perspective, if it might be okay to say to any other individual, well, you matter. And maybe our movement could be a you matter movement. One at a time.
Oh, man. That's so good, I can hardly stand it. We could start a whole new movement, You Matter movement. I like that. I'm going to say a lot more about that, and I'll give you credit the first time. After that, it's mine, George. I just
want I'll look for a percentage of all you get.
As we got to get out of here, we're going to come back next week. And it's our fond hope that we haven't offended you and you'll join us again. Between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't. That gives you a wide, wide berth.